Welcome to the Equine Connection podcast, where health, nutrition, and love for the horse come together. This podcast is brought to you by Tribute Superior Equine Nutrition. I'm your co-host, Kim Brown, along with equine nutritionist, Dr. Nicole Rambo.
Hello, Kim. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you doing, Dr. Rambo?
I am doing well. I had so much fun talking about ulcers last week that I'm ready for round two.
Me too. And I'm looking at my horses a little differently, kind of keeping an eye on them after some of the things you taught me last week. So if you missed last week, make sure you go back because you can, any of the major podcasts, you can look for the Equine Connection podcast and you can go back and see a lot of the different episodes. But in this, the previous episode, Dr. Rambo helped us understand the basics of equine gastric ulcer syndrome and gave us some insights on the different types of stomach ulcers. In this episode, we're going to discuss treatments and ways that horse owners can help prevent gastric ulcers in their horses. So, Dr. Rambo, there's so many different ways that horse owners can help their horses avoid gastric ulcers. But first, can you help us understand the difference between a drug used to treat ulcers compared to the many supplements that are available that horse owners can use to help horses be less prone maybe to getting ulcers?
Yes, good question. I think sometimes there's so much information out there, it can be hard to parse through that. And sometimes you see supplements that are making drug claims. So the main thing here is that there are specific drugs. We'll do a quick run through just so you're kind of familiar with them. So if you end up having to unfortunately have this talk with your vet, you'll be like, yeah, I've heard of that before. Supplements do not treat ulcers, right? They're there, like you said, to manage risk and help prevent. But if your horse specifically has ulcers, it doesn't matter how many claims or it's amazing and all your friends tell you about it. Supplements are meant for prevention and ongoing support. Treatment is specifically to address the disease process.
Right.
So treatment, all expensive. It is what it is, right? Horses are expensive. But very briefly, I will say this is not meant as veterinary advice. I'm not a veterinarian. I'm not qualified to give you veterinary advice. Rather, this is just meant as kind of a quick overview so that when you have those discussions, you might have a little bit of background that you can be like, ah, okay, yes, I've heard of that before.
Good idea.
So kind of starting out, I think the one that most people would be most familiar with would be GastroGuard. So that is the FDA approved form of omeprazole. Omeprazole is a drug also used in humans. Mm-hmm. Labeled for treatment of equine squamous gastric disease in horses. Now, if you're listening from other parts of the world, you guys have some other different preparations. But omeprazole has been the basis of treatment for ulcers in the horse for many, many years. Omeprazole is a proton pump inhibitor, and it shuts down some of the acid secretion that happens in the stomach, which allows the pH of the stomach. Less acid means our pH raises, and the goal is to get a threshold above a pH of 4 for at least 16 hours a day to allow for healing in that upper part of the stomach, that part of the stomach that we talked about that is not protected by that mucous membrane. It is important to note that omeprazole is specifically for treatment of the upper portion of the stomach. It is a component oftentimes of treatment for glandular disease, those ulcers in the bottom part of the stomach, but by itself, what they found is efficacy, so how well it works, is not that great for those ulcers in the bottom part of the stomach, which goes back to that discussion that we had last week of like, do I scope, do I not scope? Well, if you have ulcers in that bottom portion of the stomach, the treatment protocol looks a little bit different.
Okay.
Multiple different drugs. Sucralfate would be a pretty common one. That's a coating agent. It's going to help bind to those ulcerated areas, make a protective barrier, kind of helps allow for healing. That one can be a little tricky in that you have to time it relative to other medications and feed, because it makes, if you're coating the intestines and not just the stomach, it'll bind throughout your gastrointestinal tract. It makes it harder for things to be absorbed. There's misoprostol, which is a synthetic prostaglandin, and it does have some reduction in gastric acid. However, it really is targeting the quality of that mucosal barrier in the bottom part of the stomach. So you might see that incorporated into a protocol. And there's also things like ranitidine, which is an older generation of drugs that reduces gastric acid. It specifically works by binding histamine receptors instead of those proton pumps. You have to give it multiple times per day. Those are, and it's probably not a complete list. I imagine there's weird cases where vets are going to prescribe other stuff, but those are some common drugs that, depending on the type of ulcers, where they're located in your horse's stomach, might be prescribed to treat ulcers. In a perfect world, we would scope them, follow a treatment protocol, come back and scope them again to make sure they are all resolved, and then move on into our prevention phase. Or, for example, if you have a horse that hasn't been diagnosed with ulcers at any point, but you know it has those risk factors, it does a job, you put it on the trailer, you're probably proactively thinking about prevention as well. And that's where we can start to think about supplements and tons of management factors.
Absolutely. So supplements, let's look at them for a little bit because, you know, as we know, there's as many supplements as there are companies, but are there specific ingredients that you recommend that horse owners look for in a supplement that might help support a horse that might be prone to ulcers?
Yeah, absolutely. I do want to say first, supplements are absolutely a component of a holistic plan for prevention of ulcers.
Good point.
But you can't out-supplement your way from management that's not appropriate for that horse, I would say. Sometimes that's a bad management. Sometimes it's good management that's not quite the right fit for an individual. So I don't want people to walk away and say like, hey, as long as I put the perfect supplement in front of my horse, I'll never have an issue. Because that's unfortunately not the case. If only it were so easy.
This is why you are a responsible nutritionist, to make sure and warn us of this.
Absolutely, right? My goal is not to like self-feed, obviously. Like, we have to self-feed because that's how I have a job. My goal is to give information that helps horse owners make the best decision for their horses. Right. And I'm a horse owner too. I get it.
Anyway, all right. This is why I love this podcast, because it's all about let's take the best care of our horses that we can based on science and research and what we know.
Absolutely. All right. So thinking about, and there's no way I could ever cover all the potential ingredients that are out there. I do want to kind of touch on what I think has been a cool innovation, which is kind of our newer generation of gastric buffers. So buffers have been around forever. And a buffer specifically means that it can increase pH. The horse's stomach is secreting acid continuously. Acid has a very, very low pH. Buffers are able to help raise that pH, not to the extent that, of course, our drugs will. All right. So those drugs have the capability for doing it for longer periods of time, but buffers can be a helpful component in prevention. If we aim to raise the pH at key times, for example, before you ride, that could be a time that we might want to increase the pH in the stomach, before the horse goes on the trailer, so on and so forth. So our older generation buffers, things like calcium carbonate, different magnesiums, they would increase the pH, but only for pretty short periods of time. As a little bit of an aside, alfalfa, naturally high in calcium carbonate, that's part of what makes it a nice addition when we're thinking about the forage portion of the diet to those horses that are prone to equine squamous disease, because as we remember from last week, glandular disease is really not a pH disease issue. So we have those older generation buffers. And then more recently, we have the seaweed or marine-derived calciums. So they're both calcium. The main difference here is the actual composition of the molecule. So these seaweed-derived calcium, if you put them under the microscope, they're very porous, which means there are many, many binding sites, which allows it to be a more effective buffer. So it can actually attach to think about the protons in acid, attaches to more of them. The other thing about it, which makes it more effective, is that it has a comparatively longer period of buffering capacity when you use, for example, equal parts calcium carbonate to equal parts seaweed-derived calcium, which is mostly calcium and has a sprinkling of magnesium and some other minerals in there as well. It's a natural ingredient. But compared to your older generation of buffers, at kind of the level that we tend to see in horses, which is about 45 grams tends to be the quantity that we're targeting, you get about 4 hours of buffering out of those seaweed-derived calciums compared to only an hour or two from calcium carbonate.
Oh.
Now, this is part of what makes it a supplement and not a treatment, because remember, if the goal is to get above a pH of 4 for at least 16 hours per day, part of it depends on what is the pH you're starting at. And pH is logarithmic, meaning a change from 2 to 3 is actually a really big change. But the other part is, even if we're using seaweed-derived calcium, you'd have to give it every 4 hours, many, many times a day. So it would be very difficult, and you obviously can't have that same level of control that you would have with a drug in efficacy. So its ability to decrease pH continuously. However, there's a lot of value, especially if we're thinking about key periods of time that we would like to ensure that that pH has been increased in order to reduce the likelihood of horses developing squamous disease, so those ulcers on the top part of the stomach. So I'd say buffers are one component, but we know that supporting the stomach is not just a pH issue, because increasingly, all that newer research looking at glandular disease, we're starting to think about what are ways that we can support the lining of the stomach as well. Because glandular disease is a breakdown in that protective lining, if we can help support that, we can hopefully help, again, prevent the development of glandular disease. So some ingredients that have some research, all right, it's equine, we never have as much research data as we would love, that have mechanisms of action that are targeted at supporting the lining of the stomach. Things like aloe vera, that would be a pretty standard, like people like to add for a long time. Well, it does have some anti-inflammatory effects specifically on cells that line the stomach. And we know that glandular disease is in part a disease of inflammation. So there is some background in, that old natural remedy of aloe vera. There's some data there. Things like lecithin, which is a type of fat, can actually bind to the mucosal layer in the stomach, making it a little bit more robust. And then another ingredient that, there's a decent amount of research in other species is an amino acid called glutamine. Mm-hmm. And we think about amino acids, you guys have probably heard of things like lysine, methionine, the ones that build the muscles of the top line. Those are essential amino acids. Glutamine is interesting because it's a conditionally required amino acid, meaning that under most circumstances, the horse's body can make enough of it. But if they are stressed, they will use up more of that amino acid and their own production might not be able to keep up. And one of the places that has a high utilization of glutamine are those cells that line the stomach and actually the rest of the GI tract as well. So that is one that mechanistically makes sense. If the horse gets too much glutamine, it's not going to hurt. They'll just turn it into carbons that will get used up for energy and they will urinate the rest out. No big deal. But I like to think of how can I support the entire digestive tract? And those aren't the only ingredients out there, but some ones that I'm familiar with, ones that I actually utilize in our Constant Comfort product, which is our own supplement designed to help prevent and support ulcer-prone horses. And then finally, when I think about the digestive tract, for a very long time, we were hyper-focused on the stomach because it is the part of the horse's digestive tract that we can easily visualize. We know stuff goes wrong throughout the digestive tract. And ultimately, when I think about risk management, if there are issues in the stomach, there's probably issues downstream as well, which is where probiotics come in. So we've previously done a whole podcast on probiotics, but very briefly, probiotics are live microorganisms that have a positive impact on the microbial population in a target, our target being the horse, specifically the hindgut of the horse, where they break down all of their fiber, the most important part of their diet. So if I'm ultimately looking at something to support my horse, I'm going to think about how can I support the entire digestive tract? And that's where I might focus my supplement dollars. I will say, the very first thing I will do is address all of the other risk factors, because there are horses that once we address those other risk factors, they don't need a supplement. And like we said, you can't out supplement your way from a program that is fundamentally broken right. on a larger level.
So you kind of alluded to the diet in managing ulcers. Can you give us a little bit about feeds and feeding management for a horse that you think might be stressed or that you think might be prone to getting ulcers?
Absolutely. So number one is forage. Yeah. The quantity and quality of forage we provide to our horses is the most important part of their diet. The rest of it is meant to fill in the gaps. And we especially know with squamous disease that forage availability is the number one risk factor. So when I think about forage, it has to be palatable. They have to want to eat it. And then we want to provide as much forage as possible. In a perfect world, it would be free choice. We'd be best mimicking a natural environment of the horse. Although horses out in the wild eat for about 20 hours per day. They don't eat every minute of the day. There's a period generally overnight where they naturally fast. They're resting. Is it appropriate to feed every single horse free choice forage? Unfortunately not. I will tell you, at home, I would much rather feed a hard keeper and put as much hay in front of them as possible. But when we think about the easier keeper, we have to weigh the implications of obesity and the negative health consequences of obesity against the potential to disrupt gastrointestinal balance with our forage allocation. Okay, that sounded fancy. What I mean is when you can't feed them free choice hay, we have to at minimum feed them 1.5% of their body weight in good quality forage. And good quality doesn't have to mean super duper dairy quality alfalfa. If your horse is fat, that's not the right forage for it, okay? A nice grass hay that we can feed reasonable quantities of and then extend the period that it's available to them as much as possible. So that could look like multiple small meals. Often looks like the use of things like slow feed nets to extend the amount of time that they spend grazing.
Oh, I love those things.
Grazing, quote unquote, right, on their forage. Because what naturally happens is horses chew, they create saliva. That saliva naturally helps buffer the stomach, and the presence of forage in their stomach also buffers the stomach. And it's incredibly important when we think about exercising horses. So if you exercise horses on an empty stomach, that acid is splashing everywhere, okay? Increases our risk of squamous disease. But if they have been able to eat hay first, that hay actually makes a ball in their stomach, which creates a mat that protects the upper portion of their stomach from that splashing. So if I'm thinking about my easy keeping horse who also does a job, I want to make sure that the period of time that he spends without hay, which he's going to spend some because, you know, he's overweight, I don't want that to be right before I ride. So I'm going to think about the timing of when I provide my forage such that their stomach is full of forage when I ride. In addition to forage, horses, some of them just need a ration balancer, additional amino acids, vitamins, minerals, all that fun stuff. Perfect. Great for gastric health. Tiny, tiny meal size. Other ones need calories. So thinking about the composition of those calories that come from their concentrate meal, the sticky, sticky sweet feeds of old we know aren't good for gastrointestinal health. So our more modern concentrates are going to be lower in sugar and starches. And then we're going to use good quality fiber and fat so we can increase the calories and still keep the meal size small. So as a rule of thumb for your average size horse, 1,000 to 1,200 pounds, maximum meal size should be 5 pounds. And what I want to point out, that's 5 pounds of pelleted stuff. So if you're feeding alfalfa pellets in addition to your concentrate, you cannot have that total quantity in a given meal exceed 5 pounds because those pellets don't behave the same way that hay does. Okay, so you can't feed 5 pounds of grain plus 2 pounds of pellets and call it yes because it's forage. Those don't count. So keep those meal sizes smaller. That's really the fundamental nutritional component. Maximize forage, maximize availability of forage for our easy keepers to the best extent possible, and then pick a concentrate that fills those gaps. So if you had called me, for example, Kim, you're a horse owner, and you told me that my horse is ulcer prone, it has free choice hay, and I feed it Calm and Easy. Calm and Easy is a low MSC pellet that we make. It's a really popular feed. I would say, Kim, you're doing a great job on the feed already. We got to look at the other stuff. If you'd called me and said, I feed 12 pounds of sweet feed a day, I'd be like, oh, awesome. I could absolutely help you. But feed is incredibly important, and it's our number one risk factor for squamous disease. We know it doesn't really impact glandular disease. And there are other things that we need to control. So thinking about the horse's stress, could that horse have a low lingering lameness issue that's not super apparent, but it's creating stress in their life? It might be transportation. It might be herd dynamics like you brought up. There's some interesting research that shows that yes, horses who have access to pasture are at lower risk of ulcers. Horses who have access to pasture with a compatible buddy have even lower yet risk of ulcers. However, you can tip that too far. And if you have poor herd dynamics, for example, that mean red mare that runs everybody off from the hay pile would have a negative implication on their risk of ulcers. So again, all very complicated.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it is. And I got to say, with the Calm and Easy, I used to have my hard horse was a mare that had PSSM type 1. And feeding some of these horses, I mean, if I didn't have a nutritionist to help me kind of work through all this, because I didn't understand it all. So, I mean, that is one thing that I love about what Tribute does, is that you guys allow people to say, hey, this is my horse and here's what I've got going on. And you all will actually step in and try and help them.
Absolutely. I don't expect any of you to have the time to be an expert in this, right? So like, we're providing educational content to help you, but when it comes down to the nitty gritty, we're absolutely here to help. Because at the end of the day, this is all we do. You have jobs, you have other things, whatever. You don't have to be an expert in nutrition. So a holistic plan is what we actually look at with our personalized equine feeding plans. We don't just say like, you have PSSM type 1, feed Calm and Easy. We will talk about your forage, your goals with your horse, what your issues are, what's the management at your specific barn, whether it's your own barn or your boarding, because there's lots of ways to do it right. It's not one size fits all, which makes horses really cool and also really frustrating sometimes because it's complicated.
So is there anything else that horse owners should be doing to try and prevent ulcers besides get rid of the red mare? We can't do that because we love her.
Yeah, nope, that's not an option. Yeah, ultimately, I think fundamentally, if we look at maximizing forage and then building a program that is the best fit for our horse, supplements, cherry on top, and then recognizing that ulcers sometimes will still happen. We could do everything perfect. It's the nature of them being horses. So just being tuned into your animal and knowing when things are different or not quite right, and then pursuing those. Because sometimes what happens is someone will say, I do all this stuff and I give them Gastroguard for a week. It couldn't possibly be ulcers. And maybe they're right. Maybe it's not. But, you know, sometimes we can't know. So I would say, unfortunately, the only way to definitively rule that out is a gastroscope. But it's absolutely a possible differential for a lot of different things that can be wrong with the horse. So you guys are with them every day. Trust your gut when things don't seem right. Go ahead and follow that path and you'll figure out ulcers or not. And then we'll work on your program to hopefully adjust to prevent them again in the future. It's dynamic.
Yeah. And we want to remind our audience that we kind of had our part one in our last episode on ulcers. And I know we've talked about ulcers before on this podcast, but these two go together really well. So if you didn't hear the first one, it's great. You don't have to listen to them in order. Go back and listen to the other one, because I think that was really helpful to understand the anatomy and what ulcers are and some of the things that we can do. But any final words on this topic, Dr. Rambo?
I think we've covered ulcers pretty well. And again, like I said last week, it's evolving. I'm sure we will be back with more ulcer content in the future.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Rambo. And a big thank to all of our listeners from around the world. And again, you can find more information about equine ulcers on the Tribute website and through the link in the show notes for this show. And if you have questions or suggestions of topics you'd like to hear Dr. Rambo discuss, visit Tribute Equine Nutrition's Facebook page or look for the link to contact us in the show notes. And don't forget, there's a lot more that you can go back and listen to on health and nutrition on previous episodes of the Equine Connection podcast.
Thanks so much, Kim.